Love everything you say, even when you're bitter. Girl, I wanna get next to you. Until then, I'ma follow you on Twitter. Follow you on Twitter.
Welcome to another episode of The Download here on WGN, WGNradio.com. I'm Justin Kaufman. You can find out all this, if you're listening to it, I always have a problem with what to promote. If you go ahead and go over to the Apple and right now and where a podcast can be found, you're listening already. You already found it.
You got them.
You already found it. So yeah.
Yeah.
It's such a different thing than radio. And radio, you're like, go find me here, go find me there. What am I talking about? It's
they
a podcast. They found
good.
Me.
You're in their earbuds.
The other problem I have, and I found this in doing interviews, is that I continually want to, I've been trained to rejoin. Talking with Scott Smith. Scott Smith is here. They already know.
Right.
There's text that comes with it. Press play. It's not like they need to be reminded who's my guest.
Right.
My guest is Scott Smith. Scott Smith.
And I'm here with Justin Kaufman.
He is a longtime media mogul. I want to say mogul.
I don't know about mogul.
New
Gadfly,
new,
maybe?
Yeah, that'd be good. New media contributor.
Right, right.
For The Download and a good friend. And an unbelievable piece that I thought was very topical about deleting Twitter. And this is something we've seen about deleting tweets come just in the last couple weeks. James Gunn comes to mind, the Guardians of the Galaxy director, who I guess it was a coordinated attack, if you will, from people who don't share his politics to point out tweets that he made years ago when he was actually a trauma filmmaker that were in bad taste. They brought it to Disney's attention. Disney fired his ass. That's the idea. But there's a little bit of pushback saying, hey, listen, you know, those were as they may be in bad taste, and but they were in context at the time, or, you know, we're playing to an audience. So even if you don't like it, it could be considered art. That plus the fact that you've seen Dan Harmon a little bit have some problems for some Adult Swim stuff he's done in the past. Also, baseball players and professional athletes who continue to look back in their past as stupid things they said when they were teenagers. And you're starting to recognize that this social media platform can come back to haunt you in ways that we didn't think it could back in 2009, 2010. Scott, one of the early adapters to Twitter. Good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you.
I thought of you right away when I saw this James Gunn stuff, because I know you've been such an advocate for social media and for new media and adapting platforms.
Right.
But your piece that you wrote on your site, Our Man in Chicago, was about how you made the conscious choice, the proactive choice, the preemptive choice to delete tweets from, what, 2007 to 2012?
2014, up to, like, January 2014.
So take us to this decision, why you did this.
Yeah, so, this was, obviously I wrote this piece because the James Gunn stuff had happened, and the guys in Major League Baseball, that stuff had not happened yet at the point at which I wrote this, but the Dan Harmon stuff had. So it was very much with that in mind. But, you know, one thing I want to say right off the top is, you know, none of this is a defense or in any way like engaging with the fact that, you know, what Harmon put in a YouTube video or what James Gunn said.
You're not judging the content or the quality of that content.
Right. It's irrespective of that. But there's a whole other discussion to be had about what you alluded to, which is the motives of the Mike Cernoviches of the world, who are kind of taking this stuff out of context or actually like blacking out aspects of the media posts that they put out there in order to, you know, put a certain narrative out there. Leaving all that stuff aside.
Different podcast.
The idea of Twitter is very much like ephemeral and of the moment, and you are sort of involved in a conversation. It's, I think, in a lot of ways comparable to the way that stand-up comics will build a set, right? Or they, a sketch comedy builds within a scene, and you're kind of building on one thing. And if you take one piece of that set out or one piece of that sketch out and take it outside of the context of what's been built around it, it could look completely different in meaning, completely different in context. And what's happening with Twitter and what's kind of evolved from what it originally was, which was this sort of mostly 1-to-1 or maybe 1-to-10 communication about what you're doing, what you're up to, what you're working on, it's now evolved into everything from, you know, performance pieces where people have like parody accounts or they have, you know, personas that they use. You know, you've seen like the, you know, different kinds of folks in pretending that they are working in the government and they are this sort of resistance within
Mayor Emanuel type.
Yeah, and Mayor Emanuel type things too. So there's all that kind of stuff. And then you've got people who are using it for journalism. And then you've got people who are just teenage kids using it for, you know, saying things.
Right.
And, you know, you and I think came up in a period where the stuff that we were saying when we were teenagers or in college, there's for the most part no permanent record of that. Amen. But this is not the case with people who are still sort of formulating who they are in the world, who they are as people, who they are as adults, and also just people who are adults who are like, hey, I was having a specific conversation about the specific thing, and I said this as an illustrative example of something else, and that's why it looks that way. And so it eventually, for me, you know, I started to think about all of the things that I had, and I've been involved in a lot of social conversations and political conversations, and at the time, in that moment, in the context of those conversations, you're saying a particular thing, but divorced from the context of all that, there is, and this wasn't necessarily about anything like, oh man, I've got these super, I was being super racist and homophobic, better delete it. It was really more about, I first of all, probably might not be able to remember what I meant at that time or what it referred to. And in Twitter, the context of things is really important. And so without that, it felt like, well, that's just going to come around and, and be an incomplete thought, particularly if it was 7 years ago. I might not even think that anymore. I might have evolved as a person.
And I think of it's the evolution of social media as we know it. You and I have been having these conversations for years. Mm-hmm. And even the beginning when we're like, what is Facebook? What is Twitter? Right. When those are conversations that at the time we wouldn't know what would be in 10 years. I mean, you try to forecast the future. But what we've seen from social media, which I find extremely interesting, is a backlash to archive. Instagram stories, Facebook story, whatever the story concept right now is that they are buying Snapchat. They're buying this concept that there isn't a need in social mm-hmm. media for an archive.
Right.
That's the old game. And so it almost, if you think about it, the evolution is because of the issues that we're seeing today, but that social media doesn't want you to have an archive. There shouldn't be an archive. So when you have Facebook and Twitter and things that reach you back to 2010 and what you thought about Ozzie Guillen in 2009, that doesn't apply. It doesn't matter. It shouldn't even be there.
And Twitter has evolved into more of a blog-like format the longer it's been around. So we see things like threaded tweets.
Right, right.
And if I was looking through, I initially thought, oh, I'm going to be able to go through my tweets and I'm going to be able to just delete out things that would seem like weird or incorrect or don't reflect my current kind of thinking on a topic, blah, blah, blah. I tweet a lot, and that became just like a fool's errand. There was like, there's no way I'm going to ever be able to do this because I'll just be doing this for like right, months. Right. So I'm just going to get rid of all this. But one thing I noticed was that a lot of the older tweets just kind of existed by themselves, and there was no way to connect it within whatever conversation I was happening, whether it was like with somebody else or whether I was like posting maybe three or four tweets about one thing. And that alone, the evolution of the way in which people use Twitter has made it more likely that those things
can be taken out
in isolation end up kind of coming around.
Well, I mean, you kind of see it in a way with politics. You have a president right now who loves to tweet, and it's propaganda in the way that he's trying to sell his message. And a lot of times that message is going to contradict what he said 2 months ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago. The media loves to go back and retweet what Donald Trump said when President Obama was in office.
Right.
And that's out of context. There's a lot of times that it's about the moment and where they're at and not necessarily this concept that this is how I feel and I'll always feel this way. It's ephemeral. It moves. It's supposed to evolve. And so there is something that is head-scratching and I think somewhat wrong-headed about judging people on what they've said in the moment 17 years or, you know, 7 years ago or whatever, 2010 years ago.
There is something to be said for the need for a public record, particularly in a time when the most powerful person in the country is purposely using language in a way that is literally Orwellian, in the way that words are being twisted or meaning is being skewed. There is an important need for a public record. There's an important need for journalism to continue to document the moment that we're in. and for us to use journalism of 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 7 years ago in order to
compare it.
Right. But taking that idea and applying that idea that every person, every individual is operating under the idea that what they are saying is intended to be a public record that stands up for years, or that every person is equally newsworthy and every person is therefore judged on a certain set of kind of criteria, that 7 years ago, you know, there's this guy that Greenberg, who I was reading a story in the Sun-Times yesterday, that he's now running for public office. And, you know, everybody remembers his first at bat and he got, you know, beaned in the head. And just it was this idea of like how far somebody can come in just a matter of 7 or 8 years, and how different your life can be and how much your life experience gets informed by things.
That was the whole James Gunn argument, right?
Right.
I mean, he was saying, listen, I've evolved. And there was unbelievable piece about, I think it was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, did a column in The Hollywood Reporter about, listen, the whole point of being a human being is to evolve and change and learn from your mistakes. What message do you send that's what you said 10 years ago, you can be accountable 10 years later? And if those are the rules, Disney.
Right.
Disney, where you were making Mickey Mouse cartoons in the 30s and 40s that were racist and homophobic and just over the line as the standards of today, then you need to be held accountable the same way that you're holding your individual employees accountable.
And there is a discussion about accountability, and there is a discussion about the way in which, you know, folks in a certain, you know, white men in particular are able to kind of get away with a certain kind of language and a certain kind of behavior, right? But erasure of those individuals is not always the best way in which accountability happens, right? Because there is the sense that, okay, James Gunn has been removed as director of Guardians of the Galaxy 3. And does that leave space for somebody whose worldview is broader than or more inclusive than James Gunn? That's a perfectly reasonable conversation to be had. And should James Gunn be, just through the course of normal employment, be replaced and somebody else given an opportunity for that kind of franchise with that kind of reach? Another great conversation to have. And should we have a conversation about what James Gunn said? Yes, absolutely. But by saying he's fired, he's gone, he's removed from the public discourse because he's fired and we've dealt with that, we're actually failing to have a conversation about what it meant to say those things and what it meant to have a conversation.
And what,
it's not just
and
about
more
James
importantly,
Gunn, it's about
though,
other people.
Yeah, and more importantly, what, not necessarily what he said, but what he tweeted.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that we're seeing a tremendous shift in our society between what is language and what is text and what is social media tweets. Because even the president who gets up and says things on Twitter, not necessarily the way he would say it in person. Or, you know, the idea of, I was thinking about the hater, the kid from Milwaukee, played on the Brewers. He's the middle reliever for the Brewers, right? Or reliever. He said a lot, he was using the N-word, things like that when he was 16, 17 years old. That's taken out of context. He's quoting rap lyrics. Okay. Okay, that's not, I mean, this is a whole conversation about language, meaning they're not even his words.
Right.
So you're going to, I mean, I'm not saying, he also has a tweet in there says, I hate gay people.
Right.
Which right there, you're like, I don't know how that's, you know, better or worse than what James Gunn did. But the, you know, again, put that conversation to the side. But this idea of what language is in 2018, I find it to be fascinating that we're trying to parse and figure out what is acceptable language and in what platform or what delivery mechanism.
Right. I mean, and honestly, there is a whole layer of conversation about reclamation of language amongst certain groups, and why, even if you are, you know, having a conversation and you're quoting somebody else, there are certain words that it's a good idea to just avoid completely,
right.
Because, you know, 99% of the time, you perhaps don't have both either the experience or the understanding of the implication of those words. And even quoting somebody else, it's a good idea to not delve into that. When we set people up as martyrs by completely erasing them from that conversation and that opportunity to have that conversation, we miss the chance to actually go into detail on those kinds of things. And you have what, you end up with, I think, was Hader when he came back for that game.
Yeah.
And people were kind of cheering him. And it's like, okay, well, we've now gone back in the other direction. We are now sort of like, congratulations, you have, Ulysses, you have had this endurance test. Right, you have gone through these challenges and these trials. It's like, well, no, wait a minute.
Wait a second.
We didn't actually do that. There was just, he sat on the bench for a little while and then he came back. Well, so we're trying to do this very...
It's more like, congratulations for not getting suspended.
Yeah, right.
You did it.
You're back.
You're back. Yeah.
You learned.
Right.
Did he? I don't know. You know, so that sets up. And then, you know, a couple games later, there's people booing him. It's like, okay.
Yeah, right.
None of this is, I get what we're trying to do here, but none of it is allowing for that conversation.
Well, I think that you are taking the lead because you saw, I think it was Rian Johnson, the Star Wars director, mm-hmm. Last Jedi director, and Scott Smith, both preemptively deleting tweets. And it used to be, you know, the internet would go crazy when someone would delete tweets because that was almost an admission of guilt.
Right.
Some form. Ooh, they know politically they got rid of these things. But I think you're right on. I think that there should be a mass movement where we say, hey, you know what? It is A-okay to adapt the new technologies that are provided to social media, like Stories and Snapchat, to technology that used to be archive, and just get rid of that archive.
There's such a what I talked about in the piece of the idea. There's two ideas of this thing called context collapse, right? And one is, because of social media being ubiquitous, your personal life is now right up next to your professional life, you know, in the way that people use Facebook and Twitter. Like, you picture your kids are right next to, I have some personal news about a new job I've had. Those two things used to be really separate, and now they've come together. But then there's also this idea of taking these things, these conversations, these tweets, these posts, out of the context of their conversation. And both of those things have a specific meaning, that they're both problematic with the idea of what you've talked about as an archive. You know, if we have this complete archive, unless somebody is kind of engaging with the full storyline of this person, and it's pretty much impossible for most people to do that, we're kind of setting ourselves up for not being open to the idea that people can grow and change. And in this time of a conversation that's far more intersectional in terms of race and gender than it's in class in a lot of ways than it's ever been, it is actually really important for us to go into these conversations with the expectation that people can grow. There's this op-ed that is in the New York Times just this week about, you know, if you really want to change people's minds, you can't just immediately start with calling them racist, right? There is some argument to that, but the idea of what that means is that you're automatically supposing that this person hasn't said something racist and that you haven't dealt with that in a meaningful way. So it's automatically kind of excusing someone's behavior and not actually dealing with the content of it. And unless we're looking at a sort of broader look about how people are and how they got to that point and where they can go, but also dealing with the fact that, hey, this was said and it has an impact in this larger context, these things are all super complicated.
Yeah.
Unless we're kind of allowing for that,
super
and allowing for somebody to have a conversation and be moved in a way that says, yeah, you know what? I used to think it was okay to say that, and now I'm not. And you've seen comedians say that, you know, about certain words and about certain bits. You know, Patton Oswalt's a perfect example of somebody who has said, you know, like, I think there was a quote he had.
And he's a guy that was also targeted by the same guys who were going after.
And these are a lot of these guys, and there tend to be guys, but they also tend to be women who are really out there with social justice conversations. And it has been happening to men and women of color for a lot longer. And honestly, there is something to be said about the fact that we're finally having this conversation now that it's white dudes that are getting targeted.
Yeah, absolutely, right.
But, you know, these guys have said, you know, this is stuff that I used to do because it was a cheap laugh. And I regret the fact that I was cheap and lazy in comedy, and I would never do something like that again. And to erase somebody who can be held out there as somebody who's actually respected enough in a certain field to say, like, yeah, I would never do that, and here's why it's wrong. The meaning of that and the ability for that person to then change other minds is kind of lost.
Yeah, and I think of, I mean, I've sketch comedy for 20 years, 20th anniversary Schadenfreude this year, and I can go back on tapes that we did in the Heartland studio in Rogers Park and be like, yeah, that was an ill-advised joke.
Yeah.
Or we were pushing the buttons because we were 22 years old and we wanted to see how far we could take an audience.
Mm-hmm.
In context, it makes sense. You watch it 20 years later, you're like, that's a pretty nasty joke.
Right.
And I understand comics, the Patton Oswalts and everything, because you also have to recognize what is taboo or what is the line in 1998.
And who's the target of a particular bit too, right? Like you can have the same joke and the target is somebody who's in power and somebody who has privilege, as they say, but you say the same kind of joke and the target becomes somebody else.
Oh my God, you're so
different meaning.
Yeah,
right?
And at so many, I mean, I can't tell you how many times we'd make a joke where we had this conversation a little bit in the early 2000s with some audience. We would make a joke that was making fun of the character that would say that,
mm-hmm.
right? That's a very lofty, dumb sketch comedy idea, but the character of an old alderman is going to say things that is going to be on the line that's going to be racist,
mm-hmm.
right? Or corrupt. Or socially wrong,
right?
Now the character said that we're doing that joke because the character we're making a statement about that.
It's reflective
culture.
Of a real life situation in
right.
some way.
And
you're commenting on that ultimately.
Exactly, and so but if you take that out of context and you look at that 20 years later and that's no longer a thing,
right?
You could totally understand how people would be like, I can't believe you said that.
How dare you do that character that endorses that? It's
right.
Like, no, it's the opposite
it's
of that.
The opposite. We're in a vacuum. We've been sucked in. Everything is everything that was up is down. How do you do it? How do you delete tweets?
The easiest way I found, and this is something that other people recommended to me, it's a service called Tweet Deleter. It's about $12 a month. You don't need it for a month. You can literally just activate it, delete as many tweets as you need. And you can do it by time. You know, you can, again, I did it very specific time frame. You can do it by words. So if you're looking, like, if you want to make sure you didn't say swear words, or if there's certain kind of language that you've used before that you're like, oh, I'm uncomfortable with that, I want to get rid of that. But honestly, like that kind of cherry picking of it, it takes a lot of time. And as somebody who, as you've noted, like I've been in media for, you know, a decade and a half at least. And I thought at first, oh man, my words, like, you know, all this work, quote unquote, is going to be lost. And there's going to be some loss of, I don't know what, you know, esteem or like, you know, I've robbed the public discourse of what I've said. It's literally, I did it, I think, several months ago now, and I've like not looked back at all. And I've never
thought about it.
Oh no, that tweet. The only thing I ever lost, which it was funny, it's still in the 2014 stuff that I had said, but I had done this big conversation about what's missing in Chicago media. And it was this big like conversation on Twitter, brought other people into it. And I had put it in Storify. Well, Storify closed down and I forgot to pull that content out of there. So that's like, I don't know, those tweets are somewhere, but I'm not going to go back and find them. And that's like the only thing.
You could do it again.
Yeah, I could do it again. Yeah,
do it in 2018.
2018 version. This is the remix.
Delete Twitter. Is that that's what's called?
Tweet Deleter.
Tweet Deleter. All right.
And it's $12 and it is $12 well spent.
There you go. Scott Smith, a long time media guy here in Chicago, the editorial director of Teamworks Media, and a great voice and social media, I would say, influencer. Is that the right way to say
it? Oh, God, that sounds
terrible.
So douchey.
Yeah, it's very douchey.
Social media thought leader sounds bad.
Thought leaders, that's terrible.
Social media fellow.
Social media fellow.
Sounds like I should have a sweater and a pipe.
City of Chicago. Scott, good to see you, buddy. Thanks
good to see
for
you.
On.